And I think if you show value to the rest of the organization, the value of enablement, I think that's where there's much more acceptance eventually to what you could call data governance.
Hello and welcome to the Data Culture Podcast. I'm Carsten Bange, founder and CEO of BARC, and my guest today is Christoph Theis. He is Global Head of AI, Data and Analytics at DHL Supply Chain, so one of the big divisions of that huge DHL group. With 180,000 people, his topics and challenges are often around scale, which I think makes it super interesting to hear his lessons learned about how to apply AI successfully at DHL, and specifically AI, obviously, in supply chain. He identified three pillars for success, which is the use cases, how to bring them from idea to production and obviously scaling in such an organization successfully. Secondly, it's about the data foundation, something he thinks is often a bit underrated. And thirdly, it's about the people, how to enable them, how to build communities, how to get people excited, but also knowledgeable about AI, and how to organize that in a mix of centralized governance and decentralized enablement. Super interesting learnings in this episode. Enjoy it. Hi, Christoph.
Hello, Carsten.
Great to have you on my podcast today. And before we start to discuss AI and everything around it, maybe please give us a little bit of background on DHL Supply Chain.
Yeah. So DHL Supply Chain is the number one contract logistics provider worldwide. We're part of the DHL group. We operate in more than 50 countries. We provide warehousing services, transportation services, value-added services, running around 3,000 warehouses across the globe with about 180,000 colleagues. So it's a large company, and we're very proud to be both a great place to work as well as a leader recognized by Gartner in their Magic Quadrant for third-party logistics worldwide.
Oh, I didn't even know there was this quadrant.
There is, yeah.
That's super interesting. But impressive scale, obviously, 180,000 people. So I hope we can also learn a little bit about AI at scale, because obviously you have a massive organization here with a lot of things going on, not only people-wise, but also in terms of what you transport and what you do. I actually had the pleasure to visit your Leipzig hub and to see in at night what's happening there with all the planes coming in and going out again. Super impressive. Yeah. And so I'm really looking forward to this. We discussed what we can do, because you in your role obviously have a lot of interesting touch points to many, many different topics that should are interesting to our listeners and viewers here. But we want to focus on AI, which is obviously the big topic also in your organization at DHL. And let's start with a general question, AI. Yeah. So what's the general, let's say, purpose? What's the general view on AI at DHL? Also, did it change over the last years, as it did in many organizations? Let's start with an overview.
Yeah. So if you take a look at the supply chain sector, the supply chain industry, then over the last few years, we've seen a lot of change there, a lot of disruption. We have ever-increasing customer expectations. Customers want their products to be delivered faster. They want them to be delivered more flexibly. They want more resilient solutions. They still want cost-effective solutions. We see at the same time scarcity in warehouse space, scarcity in talent and labor in some markets, and we see a lot of potential also with digitalization, and all these things together have made that we've gone on a journey of accelerated digitalization, and we're on that journey for many years already. We started rolling out accelerated digitalization solutions, robots, several years ago. We now have more than 7,500 robots in our operations. And then a few years later came data analytics, AI. And our view really is to bring those two together and to seamlessly combine those operational technologies in our warehouses with the data side, with AI, and provide the best possible solutions to our customers. And all of this is part of our digital by default strategy.
Interesting. I'm always interested in this link to the business strategy. What role does data and AI have in that strategy? And the attached question to that would also be, do you also have defined, let's say, overarching goals like efficiency gains or something like that?
Yeah, I think data and AI can play many roles in a supply chain environment. Efficiency is one element, and I think supply chains have always looked for efficiency improvements, and that is not something new or something of the last few years. But I think it's about tackling that complexity of supply chains. It's not only about efficiency anymore. It's also about resilience. What happens if something goes wrong somewhere in a supply chain? If we have congestion in a port? If we have a disruptive event like we've seen a few of those over the last few years? How do you make sure that your supply chains are resilient, that they're flexible? And I think bringing that all together, having flexible, resilient supply chains, cost-effective supply chains, I think that is something you only can do if you leverage the data in your supply chain effectively, and if you also leverage the right algorithms, the right AI solutions, analytic solutions in the supply chain. So I'd say efficiency one element, but I think it's much broader. It's much more important to run your supply chain, optimize it at scale.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But it's also interesting, yeah, that maybe the perspectives changed a little bit, or the importance of resilience now obviously is probably higher than maybe 10 years ago. So now, looking at AI, what would be the, let's say, most prominent use cases? What are your main AI applications?
Yeah, I think if you look at supply chains, there are various types of AI use cases. So 2025, I would say, was definitely the year of the AI agents. Also in supply chains, so we've seen voice agents, we've seen email AI agents, and also in DHL supply chain, we're rolling out those agents at scale. And we see that they take certain repetitive activities, manual activities, and they can run that at scale. Think about appointment scheduling, about calling drivers for status updates, following up on emergency orders, urgent orders, payment collection, duty collection. This type of activities, I think, can be automated very well through voice and email AI agents. That is, I think, one element of it. And then I think you also have the more traditional machine learning applications that are still very valuable in the supply chain environment. Think about forecasting volumes, shipment volumes, order volumes. Think about forecasting labor requirements. That is, I think, another important area. We use machine learning also for different use cases. So we also use machine learning, for instance, to predict the likelihood that we have discrepancies in our warehouses between the physical inventory and the inventory in the system. So that's the cycle count process, where periodically we would be counting locations to see that the actual inventory that we have in that location matches what we have in the system. And we use machine learning to predict the likelihood that we have such a difference, and then we would be counting those locations more frequently. So I'd say there's still a lot of potential in supply chains for those traditional machine learning applications as well. And then you have, I think, good old optimization. There's still a lot of opportunities also for optimization use cases. Think about overall supply chain optimization, network optimization, transport optimization, digital twins. We also have solutions for that. Or optimization within the four walls in a warehouse. What SKUs do I put where in my warehouse? My fast movers closer to my dock, and the slow movers a bit further, and so forth. So I think it's important to look at that full portfolio of solutions. AI agents, definitely an opportunity in supply chains, and we're focusing heavily on that. But there are also still a lot of other very good solutions that we can roll out at scale.
Yeah, I think that's always important to mention, yeah, that AI is more than Gen AI or
it is, absolutely, yeah.
And that there's still something to do. One question that shot to my mind is that I think optimization, we do that for a very long time. Yeah, I mean, that's a pretty old technique in mathematics. And where is the change? Yeah, or why can you still optimize? That's my question. Is it because we have more data, or is it simply that because you ship what much more, or complexity has risen? Yeah, what's driving here that we are still working on things that we worked on maybe for 50 years or so?
Yeah, but I think it's a very good question. And I think it's a combination of everything you said. So mm-hmm. I think the techniques have been around for a long time. They go back to the 1950s, 1960s. The same is true for AI, by the way. Mm-hmm. But I think the techniques have also evolved. So we're now able to solve more complex problems due to improvements in compute power and so forth. Data, I think, is another element. There's a fundamental difference, I think, between developing algorithms in a laboratory environment on more academic style problems versus rolling that out in a real world environment where you have hundreds of constraints and where the degree of standardization is not always very high. And I think new techniques allow us to do that a bit more efficiently and effectively. And then there is also, I think, the element of democratization. So many of these techniques used to be reserved for very technical people, operations researchers, mathematicians. And I think now we see solutions in the market where also business analysts, data analysts, people with a quantitative background, but not necessarily with a very deep mathematics or operations research background, also can tackle these solutions in a composable way often. And I think that opens also up new opportunities.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And thank you for this perspective. Now, let's talk about how you enable these AI use cases. And I would like to link this question with the big topic, I think, also for 2025 and also for 2026 is about value creation of AI mm-hmm. and the contribution to the business goals, also financial business goals that AI can bring. So, How do you handle this? How do you identify use cases for AI? How do you basically funnel them to an actual, not only a prototype, but an actual scaled working solution in your enterprise?
So I think, in my opinion, one of the major pitfalls is to look for opportunities to roll out AI solutions. So if you start from a technical perspective, I have AI or I have a particular product and I want to roll it out, I think that is usually a recipe for failure. What is much better, in my opinion, is to look at the business problem. So what are the major business problems I'm facing? And then what techniques do I need to solve those business problems and to generate value? And that is what we do. So we use a funnel approach. So ideas come in on the left-hand side of our funnel. We look at those ideas. We look at the business value that they would generate. We look at the technical complexity of it. Is it feasible actually to even solve those problems at this point in time? And if we've identified a good idea, then we'd bring that to a POC environment. That's a controlled environment. That's not an enterprise environment. So we're making abstraction of some of the enterprise complexities there. And we test that idea and we test it for the key components. Is this really as valuable as we thought it would be? And if that is the case, then we'd move it to the next phase in our funnel, which is a phase of productization. So this is typically a longer phase. This is where we'd productize that from a technical perspective. So we'd be looking at things like information security, would be refactoring, hardening the solution. We set up the right support models. We make sure there is the right collateral, the training material, maybe internal sales collateral to promote that solution. And once all of that is done, then I think the product is ready for rollout at scale in an enterprise environment. And at any step in the process, there's a gate review. So you look at, is this really as promising and as successful as we thought it would be? And if that's not the case, then that's where it stops. And only after a positive gate review, solution can move on to the next phase. And I think also, Carsten, when rolling out the solutions at scale, you still need to monitor where you're rolling out the solutions and what value they are generating. So also there, I think it's important to have that visibility.
That makes a lot of sense. Talking about organization and also where is this happening, I think is always interesting, especially since your colleague Thorsten Kranz has been on this podcast and he's also involved at the Data Festival in the program committee. And he runs, let's say, a group-wide service unit for data and AI. That's my understanding of this super big organization you have. Then there could be a second level that you do. You have these big business units, with lots of people, and probably each unit is already larger than most companies in the country, or many companies. So you could do it also centrally in a business unit, or you could do it in business departments also in your unit. So how do you organize that? What is done where? That's my question.
So I think that is something that really depends on the organization. I think that's this is the data culture podcast. So I'd say this is a topic that is very closely related to an organizational culture. So how centralized or decentralized is your organization? Do you have more of a top-down culture, or is it more an entrepreneurial culture in the organization? So I think it's hard to... it's hard to give advice on one way of doing this. I think it's very organizationally dependent. For us, it's a collaboration between various people and various places in the organization. So I'm looking after AI data and analytics globally for DHL Supply Chain, which is one of the divisions of the DHL group, working also closely with Thorsten and his team at the group level. But I look after it at a global level for supply chain. And then we also have regional leads in each of our regions. We have six regions at DHL Supply Chain. And these teams are rolling out the solutions in their region, working in very close collaboration with our center of excellence that is providing that support. And then again, at a country level or a sector level, we'd also have those leads in the organization, and they'll be working together with the people in their countries and their sectors. So it's a large community. And I think one of the important success factors in a large organization like ours is really that collaboration. In our plans for 2025, also 2026, we have actually three main pillars. The first pillar relates to data, making sure that everything is ready from a data ecosystem perspective. The second pillar is what we just talked about, that is rolling out use cases, AI use cases, analytics use cases. And the third pillar is bringing people together, acting as one community. So irrespective of where you're reporting to in the organization and what your scope is geographically, making sure that people work together, that we avoid duplication of efforts, several people working on very similar solutions, we'd better bring them together, work on one solution, and then roll out that solution at scale.
To come back to the use cases, and you already laid out beautifully the process and the gates, but maybe you could focus on the key success factors. Maybe you could give what is your summary in a way, how to be really successful from ideas that have to get to productive solutions at scale.
Yeah, I think it's very important to really use a structured process to do this in a large organization. For us, that's the funnel approach to go from one part of the one phase of the process to the next with structured gate reviews, have visibility on what people are doing in the organization, and also see what we are deploying where and what the value eventually is of what we are doing.
All right, that's I think a good recommendation. Now let's move on. You mentioned three important pillars: use cases, data, people. Let's move to data. And obviously a common theme in this podcast, especially over the last 12, 18, 24 months, was the importance of data for AI. And I think we are also gained this understanding that without good data, there cannot be good AI. I think that was has been highlighted by many. What's your take on this? How does this interact?
Yeah, I think data is really the foundation for everything you do in AI and analytics. So a very good data ecosystem, I think, is extremely important. I often feel that this does not receive as much attention as it should. People are focusing a lot on the use cases, on the AI agents, and so on. But what we see is that rolling out these solutions at scale is only possible if you have a proper data ecosystem with the right data quality, with data assets, data products that are discoverable by people in the organization, with the right data ownership. I think it's essential.
Mm-hmm. And let me be a little bit critical. I would think many people would agree on that, but then in implementing it, that's the real challenge. Yeah, like implementing governance, getting catalogs that people actually can use and understand, especially in business departments, getting data products really to work, and so on. So, what's your experience here, or the same question? Where are the key success factors to make it work?
This is something that we started many years ago, actually, before we started rolling out AI solutions. We were focused on analytics at the time, much less on AI. And again, I think here the approach depends on the organization and how organizations work. So we are an organization with strong regions. And for us, data mesh offered some opportunities. So there were elements of data mesh that we found very valuable for our organization. Mm-hmm. We don't follow data mesh, I would say, by the book. We pick those elements that work for us. And the data product approach was one of them. And so we have an ecosystem of data products across the globe that are developed by different people in the organization. Some are developed by my team, some are developed by regional teams. But we agreed on some common rules of the game so that data products that are developed by different teams in the end are also interoperable. And some of those rules are data products must be published in one catalog, not in multiple catalogs. They must be published in one catalog. We need to make sure that we have the right data quality. We publish that data quality also in that data catalog for the data products. We have the right data access mechanisms, one data access mechanism that is used for all the data assets, data products across the globe. So I think it's important that if you have a large organization, that everyone is building those data assets, those data products with some jointly agreed rules of the game.
Yeah. So it sounds like data products worked for you in terms of what works in data mesh. You also mentioned the federated governance approach, if I understood that correctly.
Yes.
And how did you balance out central governance versus more local and decentralized governance?
So for me, it's really more about enablement than governance, and this may just be one word, but I think is a mm-hmm. fundamental difference. I think governance has often this connotation of policing something in an organization. Certainly, if you're in a global role, may be perceived as policing the rest of the organization, and I think that's not what we want to do as a global team. So we want to enable the rest of the organization to build successful data products. We help them do that. We build data products for some parts of our organization. In other parts of the organizations, the teams build those data products themselves. But we've also agreed on reference data architectures with all our stakeholders. We have agreed on the use of one catalog, data quality solution, and so on. And I think if you show value to the rest of the organization, the value of enablement, I think that's where there's much more acceptance eventually to what you could call data governance.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And enablement actually leads us to the third pillar. That's mm-hmm. people that you want to enable. So how do you do that? How do you work with the people, build communities? You already alluded on that. How do you enable them? So what are your key initiatives, the key aspects you work on?
So we started several years ago a training program for people in the organization. So the various types of trainings that are being offered. One is more a we'd call like welcome to data science or welcome to AI training, which is a training targeting a very broad audience. It's making people familiar with what is data science, what is AI, what is the value of it, what can it bring to them in their roles. We have another training for managers to identify use cases, how to create value with data science and with AI. We have an upskill program for people, data analysts who want to move into data science and AI. How can they do that? Working together with the university to do this. We have expert training programs. We look at the talent acquisition, the talent development, talent retention, which is extremely important in today's market. And I think that's really about building that community of data savvy people across the globe. And then I think the other element of it is also making sure that our general population feels comfortable with the AI solutions, the AI products that are being rolled out, such as the voice AI agents, the email AI agents. And I think it's really about helping them through this journey, making sure that they see the potential, the opportunities of these solutions for their jobs.
All right, very good. Any particular initiatives that you found to be very successful? I think we got this overview now, but I know that people are always interested in these concrete tips, or the do's and don'ts. So is there anything that comes to mind where you said, hey, this really worked extremely well, or maybe something else where you said, well, this didn't really work as expected?
Yeah, I think especially more technical people like to work with other technical people. And in a large organization, you may be a data scientist, a little bit more isolated. You may be the only data scientist, perhaps, in your function in your country, for instance, or in your sector. And I think bringing together people is essential. And bringing them together virtually in communities. We have a data community that is run by someone in our finance organization, volunteer, and that's extremely successful community. Every month they get together, they discuss certain topics, and it's very, very well attended. Mm-hmm. We also work together. We see people working together on particular projects, particular use cases. People have been working on, let's say, a forecasting solution, and there were various people working on the forecasting solutions everywhere in the organization. And if you bring them together, you see that excitement, you see that energy, even if they don't always have the opportunity to meet in person.
Excellent. Very good. To just get an idea, in your center role, how many people are in your department that support all that you mentioned?
So in my team, we have around 50 people globally. And then we also have different people in the regions. The size of the regional teams depends a little bit on the maturity and on the size of the region. But all in all, I think it's a much larger organization with probably a few hundred people across the globe working together on AI and data topics.
Absolutely. That makes sense. All right. Christoph, we're already coming to the end of our podcast.
It's going fast.
It is. And obviously, there's so much more to discuss and ask. But let's try maybe with a summarization at the end. Maybe you could give us again like the highlights and your key recommendations for people that want to drive AI in their organizations. What you have learned, how you approach things. So what's your summary?
So I would say take a holistic look at AI in an organization. So definitely there's the many use cases, very exciting use cases. I think this is what's giving everyone energy, and this is what leading to a lot of excitement. But that's one element of it. I think focus also on that enablement. So how do you run use cases all the way from I have an initial idea to I roll it out at scale? Make sure you have the right processes in place for that. Number three, I would say is make sure you have the right data ecosystem. It doesn't always get sufficient attention, but it is extremely important, foundation for everything we do. And then number four, yeah, focus on the people side as well. Make sure that people embrace the change. Make sure that people are set up for success when rolling out AI use cases in a large organization.
Christoph, thank you. Great summary.
Thank you too. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. It was a pleasure and hope to see you again soon, maybe at the Data Festival in Munich or at another event. And all the best to you and your team. And keep up with the good work on AI. And I'm looking forward where this all leads us and you as an organization, obviously.
Thank you so much.